Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Believe in Temple Football Podcast, Season 2, Episode 9. I'm AlScoop.com editor John DiCarlo, joined, as I always am, by Adam DeMichael, former Temple assistant coach, former quarterback out in Pittsburgh, in the greater Pittsburgh area, running DeMichael Brothers Performance, as I always say, training the next great quarterbacks of tomorrow. You had to work out with a bunch of guys this morning, right, Adam?
Yeah, man. What's up, John? How you doing, listeners? We had a workout this morning. We've been going probably in season, which is pretty cool. Like, I still want to get work in season, which is, credit to, just athletes and quarterbacks that want to get better. So we had a little workout this morning. My family came out, which was nice. They're running around like maniacs. We got good weather. I know there's good weather up your guys' way as well. So we've been lucky, but I know it's going to get a little cold. But today is, I guess we call it, Victory Sunday, man. I know, we're coming off a big win. So there's some positivity on the message boards, on my Facebook, Temple Football Facebook. I posted a picture on my Facebook from a couple years back of me coaching at Temple, and I was like, some good vibes, some good energy. I'm actually in my game room, little office slash my wife's Peloton room. I got my Temple jersey hanging up. So some good vibes today, man.
Yeah. Temple beats USF. Again, we're recording this. You guys will hear this a little bit later in the day. We're recording this just afternoon on Sunday. So yesterday, Temple beat USF 54-28. The Owls are 3-6 now. But more importantly, they broke a four-game losing streak, got their first conference win of the season. For Temple's Stan Drayton's first American Athletic Conference win. Want to remind you, before we get a little bit further into the podcast here, as always, the Believe in Temple Football Podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Basketball is back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, Bet Online features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. It's always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events, whether that's the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV in all caps, to receive your rewards. BetOnline is where the game starts. No one's betting on Major League Baseball anymore because the season is over. Philadelphia Phillies lost to the Houston Astros, but this is not a Major League Baseball podcast. I'll just get over it. The Astros are just too damn good. Yeah. Even though I resent the fact that they've still got a few cheaters left on there.
Yeah, they got a couple left, man. I wish that it was just a tough series. I mean, I'm shocked it went that many games with the batting average the Phillies had that series. I mean, it was just a bad hitting series, man. I mean, that's really what it came down to. You still go six games and you're batting under whatever it was, 200 as a team, whatever the crazy number was. It's amazing that it went that far, but I know Philly would have been a lot. Would have been, like I told you before, I was in college whenever they won that World Series back in, was it
08?
08, 09, whatever. It was pretty wild. So hopefully, you know, they keep this team intact and then get back there next year. I know Mattress Mac, is that his name? He won like $700 trillion or something.
Yeah.
After making that bet.
We went to my wife and I went to game five Thursday night. And yeah, I was explaining to her. I mean, she knows some stuff about baseball, but I was explaining the Astros cheating scandal to her because we were sitting in the 200 section. And when Altuve would come up or anybody was on that 2017 team, she's like, why do they call them cheaters? And I was explaining that to her. She was like, don't they at least have like an asterisk next to their names? Like they should.
Right.
We're fine. Yeah. They lost draft picks, but they're just, I mean, they're just too damn good. They're like mostly homegrown talent. Like everybody they bring out of the bullpen, like Abreu, like when he comes out of the bullpen, he looks like someone like out of a movie. If they made another like major league movie and there was some sort of intimidating closer, I mean, they're just.
That'd be him for sure.
Anyway,
they're impressive.
To our listeners, you did not come to this podcast to hear about the Philadelphia Phillies, and maybe you did. But regardless, like I said, Temple snaps its four-game losing streak with that 54-28 rout of USF. And you know by now that Ed Sadie had a big, big day, 334 yards of total offense and just said all sorts of, you know, I mean, obviously like career highs for himself, 265 yards on the ground, three touchdowns. And then he also caught four passes out of the backfield for 69 yards. Really nice day for EJ Warner. Again, career highs for him, 27 of 36 passing, 344 yards. Two touchdown passes, did not throw an interception. Camden Price kept the team going early with three first half field goals and his 18 points for a single game program record. On a day when the defense could have played better. And again, I mean, for a 1-8 team, you know, in my humble opinion, they've got some, you know, pretty good playmakers over there. Temple gave up 471 yards of total offense. And I think one of the most important plays in that game was Jacob Hollins getting that fumble recovery on the fumble exchange there, between Catravis Marsh and Brian Batty. And USF kept punching back and staying in the game. But after that turnover, Temple took that 47-28 lead six plays later when EJ Warner found Adonica Sanders at that one-handed touchdown.
Yeah, what a catch. Yeah, what a catch.
That made it a three-score game. And that was big. Like I said, big for a Temple defense that gave up 471 yards yesterday and was struggling to get some stops. So a lot to cover here, Adam, and we got a few mailbag questions to get to as well. And we'll talk a little bit about PJ Walker too, again, still holding down the starting quarterback job with the Carolina Panthers, a guy that really has been mentored in the past by Adam. So a lot of good stuff to get to for you guys as listeners. Again, a reminder too, if you're enjoying the podcast, if you're hearing it for the first time, we are available on all the major podcast platforms. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you can find us. Drop us a rating, drop us a review. That elevates the level of Temple Sports Talk on the podcast stratosphere and helps us out. So appreciate all of you listening today. Adam, we'll start with Ed Sadie. You've been around him. You've known Ed. And, you know, a kid that came out of Penn Charter, played defensive back there, played some running back. Obviously, yesterday was by far best game of his career, and it was a game that Temple really needed, that running back room needed. USF has one of the worst defenses in the country, one of the worst run defenses in the country, but still they're Division I players.
Yeah.
Was this just finally the culmination of just everything working, him getting better blocking in front of him, him being more decisive? I mean, on the one run, I mean, he had a really good individual move, broke a tackle, and then went rest of the way, but on a couple of his runs he was barely touched, and obviously yesterday was a huge breakout performance. What's your reaction when you see him just go off the way he did yesterday?
Well, I mean, I had the opportunity to recruit Sadie at Penn Charter, and I remember going to the first round playoff game his senior year, and I was going to, you know, in-season evaluation, and I mean, he must have carried the ball 40 times, and mm-hmm. You know, we were going there, and you know, it was obviously with Jeff Collins and, you know, man, Larry Knight, who's down at Georgia Tech now, we're recruiting Eddie. And I went and watched him play. And, you know, obviously we come back and we talk about what we saw. And I'm like, listen, guys, like this kid is easily, like, without the football side of it. I mean, he was a great program football player for Temple, like a Temple program guy. Like, he was going to do the right things. He was going to work his tail off. We're one of the hardest workers. He's smart. You know what I mean? If he didn't work out at defense or offense, you know, he could do the opposite side of the ball type of thing. But, like, he was a Temple kid, I thought. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So when I watched him, he must have had, like, if I'd go back, it must have been close to 250 yards and, like, four touchdowns. I mean, he was just the best player on the field. And that's kind of what he looked like yesterday. And I think the thing that – and even myself and even some of the posts and even, you know, me and you were just talking, it's like the group that probably didn't even get enough credit is the offensive line and the tight ends, because yep. that's who we've been pretty much crapping on the past 7-8 weeks because of, you know, the guys that are changing positions and new guys coming in, new guys leaving, guys hurt, no consistency. But now whenever they are successful, everybody's praising Eddie. And I know, like, you know, Nagandi gave him the helmet sticker. And
yep.
But, like, every single run that you saw, majority of those, John, there was a hat on a hat. And just last week we talked about, you know, guys, like, for instance, Wisdom last week was just running around crazily. Like, you know, mm-hmm. he was running and then, you know, the guy was just cutting underneath him and making a play. But yesterday, you know, there was a hat on a hat. Yep. And that's what you look for when you're, you know, when you're running back and you see those holes and counters and gap schemes opening up. You know what I mean? They're playing fast. But the guys up front, that group, like, I mean, Jordan Smith and those tight ends and DMR were just moving guys left and yeah. right. You know, they're inserting, blocking backers, defensive end. It was a culmination of the offensive line, you know, being more physical than USF. I remember, John, back in the day, we played these guys, and, you know, they had a little more skill than us. You, mm-hmm. I guess you could say a little faster guys, whatever the case may be, but they wanted no parts of the physicality of what right. we were doing. You yep. know, we had the Chargers of the world, and that's how.
Just, yeah, that's the name that comes up to me, Nick Charga, and yeah, you know, just
those guys, you know, yeah. Rock and them dudes. But yeah. that's what it looked like to me yesterday. It was like those guys wanted no parts of the run game to stop it. You know, I mean, there was no one on their defense that was going to say, like, "Hey, you're not running the football today." And that's just like, I remember we used to, like, put Charga on corners and safeties, and he would just annihilate yeah. them. And then the next time, you know, you're going to play action, and, you know, Adonis Jennings is running down the field, you know, in a wide open because of that. But the guys up front were stellar. That was the one of the most impressive thing. I'm sure Eddie said the same thing, but mm-hmm. You know, he runs for 270 and three tutties. I wish I had him on my fantasy league.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be living good. It's exciting to see. I know, just a little bit of confidence and just seeing a success, you know, hopefully carries over to this work week for those guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he came into the game. I mean, just for some context, and again, if you're listening to this podcast and you're a knowledgeable Temple football fan, you know about his background. I mean, he came into Saturday's game with just 290 rushing yards and one touchdown this season. He had been averaging 3.4 yards per carry, and that 265 rushing yards yesterday, that was the fifth highest single game total by a Temple running back in the program's history, and then his 334 yards from scrimmage are the program's third highest single game mark. One of the things that the guys talked about post game yesterday, whether it was Isaac, whether it was Adam, I think sometimes, you know, and you know this, I think fans sometimes look for, like, a magic bullet theory, or they look for some, like, big explanation. And the guys just kept talking about a lot of what you're saying, putting a hat on a hat. And they just kept saying, we kept straining. We just kept straining and just moving people. Is it sometimes just, I think this is why football is a fun sport to cover. And, like, you work and work and work. And again, fans want results. And then sometimes when it clicks, it clicks. Is it sometimes just as simple as that, when it was just engaging on their blocks more, following their coaching more? Again, like, guy like Wisdom Quarshi, who, again, has looked lost on plenty of occasions this season, played much better yesterday. I mean, I don't have the benefit of going back and watching, like, the coach's film, like, right. like Chris Weasahan is. It looked like a fair amount of Ed's runs came off, like, either through the middle of the line or the left side, and I'm sure they must have seen something there. But is it sometimes just that simple, Adam, where it's just like, oh, look, guys, you trusted the coaching. Finally, this week, it broke through.
Yeah, I think it has a little bit to do with that. I would venture to say that they've trusted the coaching and they've understood the game plan. And, you know, I mean, they've attacked it the right way all week of practice. Then when they get to the game, like, whether it's things are different, you know, I mean, they get a different look and they can't adjust on the fly. Sometimes that happens. But it seemed like yesterday, I think that our guys up front and the tight ends, it almost like they took it personally mm-hmm. that we can go out there and kick their butts. And, like, it's almost feel like, again, I've never played offensive line, John. I've never blocked a human, maybe, like, once on a reverse, and I, like, got annihilated. But it's like when you put your hands on somebody for the first time and you can move him, mm-hmm. you know, man on man, and it's like, holy cow, like, this is who I got to go against all game long.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could do this, like run it to my side. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it felt like to me. It was like, just keep going. You know what I mean? Like, Eddie's running for, we're in a 60 yarder and they just keep going and they're just picking up the tempo. And like, there was nobody complaining and there was nobody saying like, you know, slow it down. It was just, hey, I can move these guys defensively. Nobody out there is going to out physical us. And that's kind of the vibe I got while watching the tape. And it was just like, just keep running that thing. I mean, they ran it, what, I don't know, 30 times or something along those lines. They still, you know, threw it for, I don't know, 30 some plus times as well. So it was a good little 50-50 mix, even though we ran it, you know, that well. So it'll be, you know, something that I'm sure next week they'll try to, you know, attack again. You know, they were in that little bunch set into the boundary a ton. When they were running that toss play to the short side, and then you know, on the touchdown, they ran that one to the field. So they obviously saw some form of, you know, adjustment that they weren't making. They were doing a lot of that the last couple of weeks into the boundary, that little, you know, toss, whatever, you know, I mean, they're bringing the tackle over and pulling the guys around, crack down, and they wrap the guy around. So, you know, there's a couple different things they're seeing, and I know teams are going to really harp in on, obviously, Eddie in that run game, and that's something that, you know, the opposition will have to worry about now.
Yeah, they did not, and this was a first in the history of the program. They did not punt once yesterday. The only and the
I
only
didn't even notice that. I didn't. That's amazing. You said that. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, and the only two drives they did not score on were the one at the end of the first half when they decided to just run out the clock, and the one at the end of the game where they decided to run out the clock. Otherwise, they scored on every single drive. What'd you think of the way EJ played, Adam? Again, 27 of 36 passing, 344 yards, two touchdowns. Again, he was still pressured. And again, like we just talked about the offensive line, Adam Klein came back after not playing last week. So Adam Klein was back at center, weathered a couple of, you know, high snaps, not only just high snaps, but times where his timing was off. They had on two consecutive plays, everybody, you know, everybody but the center false started, which means something went wrong. Yeah,
that's
with
always,
Adam.
That's always a funny, that's always
a funny call.
The referee says it, everybody but the center. It's like, dude, you just, there's, well, I mean, just calling me out in front of the whole world. Like, you just say my number. That way you don't have to just call me out. But that's fine.
So Adam Klein was back at center. Wisdom Quarshie and Bryce Thoman at guard positions. And again, those guys have seen their share of struggles. Isaac Moore at left tackle. So he's the only guy who started every game at the same position on the offensive line. And then Victor Stoffel again at right tackle. But EJ had, for the most part, a little bit of a cleaner pocket to throw from. What did you think of how he played yesterday?
I think it was important after USF goes and drives down the field and scores on their first drive. After getting, you know, what, a 15-play drive, you know, some third downs, some fourth downs, it was important to for EJ to get started and, you know, gain some confidence early. I think the offensive staff and maybe even Coach Drayton said, hey, listen, let's put the kid in some situations to gain some confidence. And as you see, you know, play one, you know, 17 yards and 14 yards to Jordan Smith, another 11 to Jose, 14 to Jose. So, you know, we're down to the USF 18 just like that with a quarterback, a young guy who hasn't been playing phenomenal the last few games, but that gained some confidence, you know what I mean? Some RPOs, you know, guys coming free and he's, you know, hitting Jose on a slant and Jose's breaking some tackles. But I was impressed. I think he gave his guys a chance on a ton of balls, which is always a big deal for quarterbacks. You know, he allowed on a couple touchdowns, you know, Jose to go ahead and run and, you know, make a play on a ball and, you know, keeping the ball in bounds. Even on some third downs, he, you know, stuck in the pocket and, you know, completed balls to get into fourth and short and allow them to go ahead and go for it. But he was impressive. I mean, I could probably go on and on, but there were some things that you're like, wow, like he threw the ball away when he needed to. You know, you still hope when we get down there in the red zone, we could throw the football in for some touchdowns and some scores and not have to bring the kicker in early. I think that's still where we're lacking, scoring touchdowns in the red zone, especially throwing the football. I know we caught a touchdown with Adonikis on the one hand or whatnot, but you got to get down there and be able to score touchdowns in the red zone, especially, you know, when teams are known we have to throw the football. That's the one thing I think that needs to progress for us to be where we want to be these next few games. But he was impressive. It looked like he had just a grasp of the game plan better than any of the past few weeks that we've seen. Again, I'm not in the meeting rooms. You're not in the meeting rooms. But from an outsider standpoint, that early confidence, I think, really helped him. And, you know, you get the ball around to what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 guys, which is cool. So everyone's kind of feeling it. You know what I mean? You had Ahmad going in there catching the football. You know, you get the ball to DMR a couple times. Having Jordan Smith back was nice. So that always helps a young quarterback. So I was excited for him, and I'm excited kind of his, you know, projection for heading into this next week.
All right. So EJ Warner was obviously one of several players to talk after the game yesterday. And I asked EJ, you know, what that game meant to him, considering like the numerous offensive line combinations that have played in front of him. Again, that Temple has not had the luxury of starting the same five guys 2 weeks in a row. And I think, you know, we've talked about this before. EJ, I think, is well conditioned to not throw anybody under the bus as he continues to go through his own growing pains as a quarterback. And he's played in front of so many different offensive line combinations. And we talked just now about how much better a guy like, for example, Wisdom Quarshi played. So I asked him about that line and just playing behind them and what they were able to do yesterday. And this is what EJ had to say after the game yesterday.
Yeah, I'm just so proud of those guys. Like you said, we've had so many injuries and so many different combinations of people. They really just, those five guys came in today and just executed what they had to do. I'm just proud of them for bouncing back after other weeks and just coming back, playing their game, opening up holes. The run game was fantastic today. Made my job so much easier. Just had to hand the ball off and become a fan, just watching the ball, watching these huge holes open up, watching Sadie run through them, break tackles. Just overall a good day. Just so proud of those guys, the way they played.
Adam, before we look ahead to, you know, to Houston, you know, again, Houston was in a crazy, crazy shootout loss to SMU. Obviously, again, look, I mean, Temple's 3-6. And if they are going to get bowl eligibility in place, they have to beat Houston, they have to beat Cincinnati, they have to beat ECU, and I don't know how likely that is. But this might sound like, again, like a simple question too, but I do think that so much of this can be broken down into like some simple things. I'm curious for you, again, you've gone through it as a player, you've gone through it as a coach. Sometimes I hear coaches say it's easier to teach after a loss, because players, like, their minds might be open and be like, okay, that's what I'm doing wrong there. For an offensive lineman, it might be like, oh, I just need to get my, I need to improve on my pad level. Or I need to, like, you know, if I'm a receiver, I didn't run this route at the right depth, so on and so forth. And yeah, this might sound like, obviously, wins feel great. They are what they are. How much does it help a staff out? Again, they had won two games, but they had beaten Lafayette and they had beaten UMass. Again, I don't want to try to disguise USF, but it's still a conference win. Is it a little bit easier to reach players after a win and you can like sit with them and you're watching film? You've been through it. You could say, hey guys, you trusted the coaching for a week. We got it done. Like, right. What is coaching like after a win? Is it a little bit easier to reach players, or do you on the flip side of it have to guard against any like, you know, false sense of security? Yeah. Like, oh, now we're, you know, we're really good.
Yeah,
what's
now
what's
arrived,
it like coaching,
man,
off a win?
Yeah. It's like, I think it's to, you try to keep it as consistent as you can, whether it's a win or a loss. So, you know, even during our wins, you still have, you know, each play graded, and there's still negative plays. There's still false footwork. There's still bad angles. There's still bad reads. There's still, you know what I mean, poor routes. There's still drops. There's still, you know, eyes in the wrong place. There's still some things you could teach off of that's not going to make it seem like you just won, you know, like we were just talking about, the World Series. So that's always a plus as a coach. And I would imagine that staff has a good grasp of how to coach, especially after, you know, losing as many games as we have, you know, in the last few weeks. So, you know, if you're continuously coaching off of, you know, from losses, like, you can't change necessarily how you're teaching off of a win. You can't change it too much. You know what I mean? You don't want to, I should say, because, you know, the players kind of notice that's the kind of thing, you know what I mean? And most of these coaches nowadays, they want to be the same guy no matter if it's a win or a loss. Now there's going to be some excitement, you know, they're going to show Eddie's plays today in the meetings and everyone's going to be juiced up, and a couple of these big plays, you know, the one-handed, you know what I mean? And, you know, there's certain things you're going to show that you're going to bring some excitement and positivity back to the team throughout this week. But very quickly, it's going to have, you know, they're going to have to turn their turn towards the next week. And I think the staff's going to get them ready for that.
Yeah. And so again, next week, a trip to Houston awaits. Again, Houston was involved in a crazy shootout yesterday. They lost 77-63 to SMU. But hey, I mean, if Temple can carry a little bit of confidence into this game again, I think that Houston's a much better team, and they're certainly going to have their their hands full defending a quarterback like Clayton Toon. Again, it came in a loss, but he went 36 of 53 yesterday, 527 yards, 7 touchdowns. He threw 3 picks, also rushed for 111 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, had a good week.
Yeah, I mean, just a crazy – I mean, there were 28 points scored between both teams in that fourth quarter. But it'll be interesting to see how things go in the next few weeks for Temple because, you know, it's always interesting to see – what a win does for a program. Again, even if it's just they just needed to get in life, we sometimes say, I just need a win, whether it's at work, yeah, whether it's in your personal life or something like that. You just need a win, and they need one. So we'll see what happens next week. Obviously, we'll have more in Houston for you guys next week.
Yeah, because you figure, I mean, the Houston staff can't be happy. I mean, I was on Twitter just scrolling through some stuff, and their head guy was talking about how he knew, like he said this, like he knew that SMU was going to score in every single time they touched the football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what he said. Like, I knew that they were going to score. I mean, you give up, you know, 9 touchdowns to the kid from SMU. You know what I mean? And that's so I would venture to say their week of practice is going to be very, very difficult. So they're going to come in with, you know, a little bit of chip on their shoulder because they just got their butts whipped.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that we come off a victory, so it's going to be 2 clashes. You know what I mean? They know that they got 5 wins now, so they got to get another win to, you know, be bowl eligible, and then we got to just keep digging after coming off a win. So it's going to be, you know, two sides of things clashing, and it's going to be difficult for us to stop those guys. You know, and I always hated playing down in Houston too.
Mm-hmm.
I just had no good vibes, John, man. It was just just nasty. I don't know why, but it'll
tough
be a
place to play.
It was, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't like UCF was number one to me as a coach. And then when I went out to Houston, I'm like, you know, it was almost like deceiving. Like you think Houston, you're like, this is going to be a cool little city. And then when you get there, it's like, it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the red uniform, they had a good little defense when we were there as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I just never had good vibes coaching there. They always kind of took it to us the majority of the time. So it'll be interesting to see how, again, like I said, those 2 things clash.
Yeah. Before we close things out with a couple of mailbag questions, I wanted to touch on PJ Walker here. Again, I wonder, and maybe we'll be able to get PJ on the pod, back on the pod at some point. I'm sure it's a weird mix of emotions for him, probably a weird mix of emotions for you too. I mean, Matt Rhule loses his job down there, but for the foreseeable future, PJ gets a chance to keep a hold on that starting quarterback job. And you know, last Sunday against the Falcons, it comes in an overtime loss, but some really good numbers, 19 of 36, 317 yards. I mean, the Hail Mary toss, you got someone like Patrick Mahomes saying, like, I forget exactly what his tweet was. He's like, nobody, that's the throw of the year in the NFL this year. And I think he had something like 62 yards of air under it. I mean, like a big, big, big time throw. And he's getting a shot right now, you know, and in a weird division. You know, again, you had a big hand in mentoring him. You guys have been close. What's it like to see what he's doing right now in the league?
It's exciting. I promise you, I'm not lying. I've seen him throw like this in college.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like I've never seen the throws for a guy that's under 6 foot tall at 205 pounds in college, wherever he was. Like I've never seen a human throw the football like him. Like he threw the ball, I tell you guys all the time, better than any quarterback we played in college, better than Teddy Bridgewater, obviously Blake Bortles when he was at UCF.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Jones was the only one that had any kind of comparable, you know, throwing motion, speed of the ball, arm strength, touch, accuracy. Like PJ was just different. And you could see some of the clips that even I retweeted, you know what I mean? Some of the balls you throw, I'm like, Jesus, how does that even happen?
Mm-hmm.
But back to your point, it's pretty cool to see. I know that he feels like, you know, he could have done this a long time ago, given the opportunity, but the kid's just taking things one day at a time. I know that I talked to him yesterday. Frank Newtow actually just sent a picture of me and him and PJ on the sidelines when we beat SMU, like 60-40, whatever year that was.
That was right after you guys lost to Notre Dame, right?
Yeah.
I remember heading into that game, Matt saying, I'm very, very concerned about this game. Very concerned about how we're going to be coming off of this moment.
That we had
so many. Yeah, of course, I'm like paraphrasing here.
Right.
It's a crazy game. That is the game where Jagger ripped off like the 95-yard touchdown run, right?
Yeah, and then we, you know, we scored and ended up scoring 60. But he's a kid who I know when given the opportunity, he's going to make the most of it. And I think, you know, his teammates trust him. I think that, you know, obviously with Matt not being there, a new guy comes in essentially, you know, and he's playing better than the guys behind him. So, mm-hmm. and that's what's cool to see. The kid just continuously just pushes and just keeps pushing no matter the circumstance. And then given the opportunity, he's playing well. So I'm anxious because I know it's 12:45 here now. He's actually on our TV here in Pittsburgh because the Steelers are on a bye. So the Panthers and Bengals are actually on TV. So I'm going to go be able to watch that one. Hopefully my wife puts down the two boys so I can watch it. But it's exciting, man. Like I said, I was just training the kids today, and a bunch of kids know about PJ now, obviously, because he was all over the internet. They're like, PJ Walker, you know him? I'm like, yeah, guys. Like, you know, he's like my little brother. But it's exciting to see. I know that a lot of people are happy for him, and hopefully this prolongs his season as a starter, and then see what happens next year. You know what I mean? If they continue to win some games and things of that nature, or someone else picks him up, however the case may be. But he's just taking things one day at a time and trying to be as consistent a player as, you know, he can be. Because, I mean, that's kind of where it's about, that next level.
Yeah. So we got a couple of mailbag questions here from Twitter to close things out. The first one comes from the Twitter handle is Off the Hook 3. Question here is, it's the year 2050 and Adam is talking to his, Adam is talking to his grandkids about the golden age of Temple football from 2014 to 2019. Which moments stick out to you the most?
2050. As a coach, I mean, just I was just talking to a couple of my buddies. One of them's getting married, and actually he's a Michigan fan, but they came to the Notre Dame game with College Game Day when they came to town, and they all came to that game. They were on the sidelines. But that was probably one of the coolest moments of my playing slash coaching career, just having those guys on campus, having those guys, and then just the crowd and how close the game was. No one expected it to be. And, you know, we were just right there. Like, I don't know what happens if we win that game, if we end up winning a couple more, and, you know, and who knows what can happen. But that was probably one of the coolest moments. I'll probably go back and bring that up. I think, you know, winning the championship was also pretty cool. You know, as a player, I don't know. I mean, I'll probably show him a couple clips of old grandpa. But just that was probably one of the coolest ones, I would think. Hopefully there's some more, you know, here in the next 30 years. Yeah. I could talk to him about, like, maybe I was hoping to come to the Cincinnati game, but my niece has a birthday party. But, you know, hopefully I'll be able to get the boys to some games, you know, as a former alum somewhere down the line, and you know, we can make some memories that way. But probably that College Game Day was probably the coolest atmosphere that I've ever been part of as a coach or a player.
One of a guy that like does some work for me at Owl Scoop, and he's also interning for the Inquirer and covering Temple for the Inquirer, Caden Steele, was sitting next to me at the game yesterday, and he was asking me a couple of questions, just picking my brain. He said, who's the best Temple running back you've seen in the last 5 or so years or last 10 years? And who was the best Temple running back you've covered? I said, it'll probably be, say, the last 5 or 10 years. You're talking about Jihad. And I was talking to him about the progress that Jihad Thomas made to where he gets to that 2015 season. He's putting his foot in the ground, making that move that he made against Penn State, the move that he made to get in the end zone against Notre Dame. Those runs were, you know, a couple seasons before that, he was a guy who was just getting involved more in the screen game.
Right.
I said, but then you got to throw Bernard Pierce in there. I said, they were two different backs, and Bernard had his struggles with staying healthy, but both really, really good backs. But it's fun to look back. You've been around both of them.
Those two, and then I would add Armstead. Like, Rockwell was just unbelievable. I mean, those two. I mean, we've had a good little group of running backs, man. It's been impressive. Yeah. Jihad just, you know, that one cut, get vertical, didn't have the extreme, you know, that long speed. Mm-hmm. I remember we threw a couple screens at Houston, and he got kind of tackled on, like, the – freaking 4 yard line after like 80 yard run. But he was just so dang electric with that suddenness, and then you know, just I remember recruiting Bernard, just had gigantic legs, and you know what I mean, just the how low he played, the center of gravity for a big back, you know what I mean, to play the way he did was just ridiculous. And obviously playing in the league, and then, you know, Rockwell was just, you know, he has the speed and the vision, and you know what I mean? And he trusted himself and obviously found a way into the NFL. So there's some more too, you know what I mean? There's a slew of other backs out there. So we've done a good job with running backs.
Mm-hmm. The other question here from the Twitter handle is Dr. Drew. How worried should we be that EJ Warner is going to transfer? I mean, I understand it's a different era now. You have to re-recruit your players every year. I don't know. What do you think of this one, Adam?
You'll probably have a little better idea how he's doing with the team, and like, you know, if the only way, again, I don't want to think negatively in the future, but the only way I could see something happen is if a staff change happens,
mm-hmm.
or, you know what I mean, something, you know, they're not winning, but the kid's the starting quarterback right now. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong, there might be a transfer that comes in and has to compete with him next year, or mm-hmm. you know, obviously we have a freshman coming in. Mm-hmm. Now, those things happen. Now, if he gets beat out or mm-hmm. something along those lines, then you could see something happen. But if you're the starting quarterback, why would you want to leave and go yeah. have to go somewhere and have to, you know, win that job, say at a bigger school, you know, say West Virginia calls like, hey, you can come here. And well, West Virginia already has three guys, you know, I mean, you're going to have to go compete with. You want to go compete at West Virginia or essentially be the guy here. But I wouldn't be overly worried right now. I think, you know, I would venture to say he's probably pretty happy. You know, I don't know if he came in this year thinking he was going to be playing. I'm sure competitively he thought yeah. he could, but now he's in a spot where essentially this is his team. He takes a big stride into this last 3 weeks and then, you know, gains some weight in the offseason, becomes even more confident in the offense. You know, a few different weapons come in, help him out. Like I said, another transfer might come in and, you know, have to compete with. So I think he understands the landscape. I would imagine his family understands the landscape of college football now. But like, you know, I mean, the grass isn't always green on the other side. So I would venture to say he sticks it out and continues to push through. And the only way something happens is if, one, he loses the job and wants to go down a level, or, mm-hmm. you know, a staff change happens and, you know what I mean? He moves on. But, you know, I would think, you know, positively he sticks around here.
Yeah. And I to add to that, and sometimes when we get, and we appreciate all the mailbag questions we get, and even like on Al Scoop on our message board, sometimes I tell people like, I could give you the hot take answer. I could give you what I think is the logical answer. And sometimes the logical answer is the boring answer, but again, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It is a week by week by week by week thing. If you're asking me right now, I don't think the fans should be too worried about him transferring. I would think after yesterday, and again, it's not like after he got off the dais in the postgame press conference, I pulled him aside for one-on-one and said, hey, mm-hmm. Jay, now that you had a 300-plus yard game, you know, 344 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, do you right. feel like you put some good stuff on film for a Power 5 school? It's not like we're having that conversation, but I would have to think that yesterday was a moment where he can see, okay, here's what happens when the running game works for me. It puts less pressure on me. Here's what happens when I can start to, you know, build up more. Again, even, you know, even though, you know, yesterday, I mean, like Jose Barbone, 8 catches, 103 yards and a touchdown. Like he can see, oh, I was able to get the ball out to 8 or 9 different guys. You know, like he's getting more time to work with guys like that. And again, like he's going to have to work with some new receivers next year, newer receivers. But yesterday was a chance where you could say, oh, wow, it is possible if we yeah. do things the right way, if things start to click, this is what's possible for us. So right now, if you're asking me, I would not be too worried. It's, and again, like these are the questions that fans ask. Like before I was heading into the link, met up with some friends, my buddy, Mike Mudrick, who covered you, was my mm-hmm. former assistant editor at Al Scoop. And then after I left those guys, I ran into somebody else and they were like, well, why would Tyler Douglas come here next year out of Ocean Township if EJ Warner is already entrenched as the starter? I'm like, you have to have at least two good quarterbacks. This happens all over the place. And you have to see how things go week to week for EJ Warner. What if he, mm-hmm. what if he, you know, not that I'm rooting for this for him. What if he doesn't finish out the season well? What if he gets hurt? Like, I think all these guys understand that they have to compete right now. I'm just going to be as honest as possible. EJ's not competing with anybody. Like Quincy Patterson is not, I can't imagine Quincy Patterson is pushing him enough in practice to start. They haven't even played him much over the last couple of weeks. I think they've abandoned right. the whole, let's bring him in and disrupt EJ's rhythm with the hope of getting 3 yards on fourth down. Mariano Valente is not pushing him. So it's a good thing if Tyler Douglas comes in and gets to redshirt and they push each other. These cliches, we try to stay away from them in writing, but cliches are there for a reason. They're true. So I don't think he's going anywhere, but again, you never say never. I don't I don't know how things will go in the offseason, but as of now, I'm not getting any vibes that he's looking to go anywhere else. You know, if I started to get those vibes or I start hearing credible stuff, and yeah, then we would report it. But I don't.
He's got one chance, John. One chance he's going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Is if his father gets a job somewhere coaching college football.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it, man. That's all. As I'm thinking here, I'm like, why would he want to go anywhere? Okay, Pops gets a job. He wants to get into some college coaching. Mm-hmm. He's a QB coach. I'm going to go play for my dad. See ya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess in this landscape of college football now, that's going to be the question for – I mean, we're going to get that about Leighton. I mean, is he going to go in the NFL? Oh, yeah. Is he going to transfer? I mean, that's coming up here in the next few weeks. Maybe even like Jordan McGee in those worlds. I mean, he's playing phenomenal football. There's probably some other guys that you could probably think of, like, hey, mm-hmm. who's going to have some options to get, I guess, recruited by some Power Five. So it's an interesting time. It's an interesting landscape of college football. And I think those questions are just always going to be there. And hopefully mm-hmm. at Temple, you know, I mean, we can, you know, build those relationships and, you know, they could have enough success and enough, you know, positive feedback from fans and, you know, have some trust in their coaches and team that they want to stick around here and help build something like, you know, we've had in the past.
Yeah. I mean, again, this wasn't Drew's question, but again, and you, Adam, you know Leighton better than I do. If you're worrying or keeping an eye on somebody who's going to transfer and not be around next year, I'm looking more at Leighton Jordan. And I think if Leighton gets fourth, fifth, sixth round evaluation from the NFL, I think he's more likely. If you're a Temple fan, I think the chances of Leighton Jordan being back are a lot slimmer than EJ Warner being back. But if Leighton gets a chance to be drafted, that's what you want to see. You don't want to lose him to a Penn State like you did with Arnold Ebiketie or stuff like that. But yeah, it's a different time in college football. Again, coaches will tell you they have to re-recruit everybody. There's going to be a ton of roster movement. I'm sure there are guys that we watched play yesterday that will not be here next season, either because they're just not good enough, that it's going to be a constantly evolving thing. Adam, you've been part of those conversations as a coach and as a player. So interesting question, but gun to my head right now, Drew, I think he's at Temple next year. So appreciate all of you guys checking in for another episode. We'll be back with you next week. Adam, have fun watching PJ on TV.
Can't wait, man.
I'm not sure what game we're getting out here in Philly because the Eagles already played. So, yeah, always good spending time with you, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.